That's fantastic. Thank you very much. So you all went off and did a game jam for about an hour, supervised by a team of possibly the most ruthless game designers that I know. People that I can be absolutely confident will get something and get you back ready to look at it. So what we're going to do now is take a little look at the results. So the way we're going to do this is each team's going to talk about the design that their group decided would be the one that they'd like to take forward. You're going to spend, let's think, how long have I got? I've got an hour, no more than 5 minutes talking about it at the very most. At the end of their spiel, their Dragon's Den sales pitch for their game, the supervisor will chip in with any additional points, any insights that they have, and then we're going to move on to the next. Okay? So we're going to start with this one.
Okay, so this is our game called Arctic Gold Rush. It's basically a resource grabbing game. So the basic idea is you've got a whole map of the Arctic Sea looking down with all the countries arranged around it. There are also unknown quantities of resource scattered across the Arctic. These are cards that are upside down. You can turn them over. I don't know how many other people have got this idea. Cards you can turn over when you get there and see how much resource is underneath. Apart from the resources that are in, you know, recognised territorial waters of the countries already there, all the other resources are up for grabs, and it's basically first come, first serve. The objective of the game is to basically acquire as much money as you possibly can. You get money by grabbing resources. The money can also be used for acquiring assets. So these are either military or commercial, ships, oil rigs, whatever they happen to be, to send them around the Arctic to grab the resources. You can also use this money to acquire chance cards. These could be good for you, bad for the enemy, good for everyone, bad for everyone, depending on whatever the cards might be. So some cards could be severe winter, all commercial assets have to withdraw or are destroyed, I haven't quite decided. Or Greenpeace stages a protest, you have to stop drilling. Things like this. So then depending on the resource counter you land on with your oil rig or whatever to extract the resource, you get a certain amount of points. This is the amount of money you have every turn from that particular place. However, if you don't guard it with a military asset, somebody else can come along with their military asset and take it off you. So we'll have a very simple sort of combat rule, which is if you've got an unguarded commercial asset, any military asset will simply occupy it and destroy yours. Military assets, it's simply who goes to the same area with the most wins. So the various countries, so we're talking the major Arctic powers, will have different starting elements. Some people start with more money, but less assets. So like the Chinese will have nothing particularly much in the region in terms of extraction, but they have lots of money and possibly some military assets in the region. And the Russians will start off with not much money, but plenty of extraction methods. And according to playtests, this can be balanced accordingly. The game will have a set number of turns. Well, it will have a determined number of turns. The end point will be decided effectively by a random roll. This is to basically represent effectively a final UN resolution. At this point now, this is the map of the Arctic. Who has grabbed the most now is now yours. So if you've grabbed the most by that point, well done. You own the Arctic now, and there's no further combat. So you'll look at that and look at the amount of money you've got, and you either win or don't.
Cool, thank you. Who's supervising that?
Mine is not here, so I'll take credit. We had a slight difference of opinion. We basically, two of our groups came up with essentially the same game, slightly different. We were looking more at kind of a modest matrix game, mega game kind of thing. So I think what's going to happen is they're going to go off and do their game, and we're going to go off and do our game, and you'll get two games out of our group.
In the finest traditions of, yeah, we'll only have one game.
We just got explained by Stephen. We should do this.
Absolutely. So the next one is this.
Obviously, wrote it out so you could all see it, but you can't now. Right. We went for a very different approach. We went for something that was going to be fast, easy, simple, hopefully fun. So on a very small level, essentially, you have competing teams. You can start with one team. You can go up to as many as you've got resources for in the deck. And the idea is that you are fleeing from some peril. Your helicopter's crashed, your Arctic base has fallen over, your ship's broken, whatever it happens to be. You're trying to reach safety, wherever that might be. We've decided a ladder track for movement, so every turn you can move along one towards safety, but every turn you turn over a random event card. Now this random event card is usually going to be fairly bad. It could be something like a whiteout. We thought a crevasse, a polar bear in a crevasse. We've got, or you could have a random resource find, like someone else's pack. You could, anything along the way that's going to be useful to you. And very few small mineral finds. Now, they are crucial because you also have, you carry some resources with you at the start of the game. That's your rations, could be an ice pick, could be rope. It'll be randomly dealt from a pack. And these are also the resources you'll pick up on the random events. Now, you use those as you want. However, if you run out of resources, you're gone, you're dead, and you lose. If you reach safety, you've won, but then one of the other teams might also reach safety, in which case they've also won. So then you see who's managed to pick up the mineral finds along the way. And obviously that gives you the bonus. So essentially, it's a resource management game. You're moving along a track, you're running away from some approaching doom, bad weather, ice monster, cracking the ice, the Russians are coming, whatever you want to do. You're fighting the weather and you're fighting the environment. And it's going to be designed as a very fun game for one plus, hopefully easy to pick up and fast to run.
I see the word Steven.
Well, we thought... Yes, if you come across another team, maybe you're both together in the same track, might be some mechanism so you can actually steal from their team. Obviously, that would be entirely underhand, and we wouldn't want to promote that, though.
Okay, really interesting. For those who are involved in that, I would recommend that you take a look at the game called Not Alone. It's French design. It's ridiculously expensive in this country because the euro and the crash of the pound. But that has an interesting mechanism which might help inform gameplay about that. Right, who was supervising? Any comments you've got?
Only two quick comments. First of all, honourable mention to the one that didn't get through, which was almost but not quite entirely similar to the first team's design, which the honourable mention is that its title, Ice Cap Italism.
Excellent. Okay, so the next team, Aurora Borealis.
Yep, that is us.
Yep.
Can we go last?
You want to go last?
Yeah, which game
you Okay.
I'm hard to call.
The next game, Aurora Borealis, is France.
Oh, it's fine.
Excellent.
Right, thank you. Okay, so it was close between the three games that our group came up with, but this one came out on top. The name that we chose for this game was Aurora Borealis, or Fire and Light in the North. It's a political military game, much more political than military. The main players in the game are Confederation, a not quite stable confederation of indigenous nations of the North. The geographical area we thought would be just generally the Russian North, so from the Murmansk area through to Kamchatka, nearly to Alaska. So we have a not quite stable confederation of indigenous nations of the North that have been united by a leader or an upsurge of animist religion, something like that. So that group would be several teams of two to three people. You'd have a set of external actors, which would also be teams of 2 to 3 people each. The obvious players would be national ones, Russia, US, China, possibly Canada. Then you'd have some large private companies, multinational corporations, shipping companies, and add in some variety, some NGOs, and of course the United Nations with its recent Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The bone of contention within the game would be a transit route that's crossed, opened across the Atlantic, or sorry, across the Arctic, that generates money, wealth, influence, whatever, if it's not interfered with. So the problem is you've got this group of people who are on the border of this transit route. Basically, it's a game about influence flowing into and among different groups. So you have the external actors that are working to try and perhaps try and fracture the Confederation of Indigenous People. The Indigenous people are trying to pull together. Everyone has a slightly different agenda, even within the confederations. There are slightly different agendas. There'll be asymmetry of player abilities or actions. Again, asymmetry of agendas. The audience would be generally politically aware public people, policy wonks, people like that. The size of the game would be perhaps about classroom size, 20 to 30 people. Probably wouldn't want too many teams, otherwise the number of interrelations would get too large and slow the game down. Mechanisms, it would probably be largely a card-based game, but we were thinking of cards and cubes as tokens of influence. Which can represent different things, depending on the area maps that they're deployed on. So there would be an area map that represented the human terrain, which is the peoples involved, then another map for the natural terrain, which is the actual territorial control, and then a map for the artificial terrain or the infrastructure that's laid on top of that. So that's the transit lines themselves, pipelines, refueling stations, all these kinds of things. So those would be the mechanisms, different forms of winning, as again, everyone has slightly different agendas and slightly different victory conditions. So types of victory that you could have in this game would be an indigenous victory. Say they survived, the Confederation of Indigenous Nations survives intact to the end of the game with some help, then that's an indigenous victory. There could be a nation victory, where one of the nation players comes out on top, having realized its agenda, or perhaps some other form of corporate victory, where someone just walks away with a big pocket full of cash while everyone else is fighting. So I think that's all, Tom.
Yeah. Excellent, thank you. Okay, as the supervisor for that session, honorable mention for the one that actually scored exactly the same votes, but ruthless guy in charge, I selected that. The other mention was, if we've got an area where we've got falling population rates, certain countries in the world have been known to forcibly resettle people, and therefore the game included a component of that, which I found very interesting. But the thing that piqued me the most is that all of the analysis that I've seen about the Arctic has not really mentioned the indigenous people, other than to pat them on the head in a very patronizing way. And the possibility of a leader that could unite those indigenous people is something that really intrigued me, which is why we ended up doing that one. Okay, who's next? Want to go last? Okay. Hands up if you don't think they should go last. Sorry, mate. That's how it works.
Well, look, there's nothing like starting with the crowd backing you, is there? Okay, so the game, really, I'm going to start with the hook for the game, effectively, which is the concept that over the mid to long term, over the next 50 to 100 years, access to the Arctic is going to become much easier. Effectively, as global warming progresses, more resources will reveal themselves, and you will be able to do more as a power block country trying to exploit the Arctic. So you've already heard about a resource management game in the short term, a gold rush. This is a much longer term game, all about area control and access to resources, but played over 50 to 100 years. So the players are essentially the four key power blocks. It's an asymmetric game, so they will start in different positions. There will be some shared objectives, exploitation of resource, essentially victory points for control of areas, but then there will also be hidden objectives. For example, Russia may be particularly interested in controlling a certain naval channel to gain access from one area of the board to the other, etc., etc. So there will be hidden victory points, but there will also be shared victory points as you compete for the exploitation of the Arctic over time. Obviously, to represent the availability of the Arctic, the board will start mostly obscured, and then every turn, which will represent 5 to 10 years, more of the outer of the terrain will become available to represent the decreasing area of ice cap and permafrost. However, it doesn't just end there, because as well as having this obscured area that you can't necessarily compete for yet, you can, however, invest in technologies. We would talk to think about automation. So you can invest in technologies about automation, which will enable you, which will give you the edge to exploit them quicker, because it may be an area that humans can't go to, but automated robots may be able to exploit ahead of you. You can also send out scouting parties, so you can effectively have a look under a tile so that you know ahead of everyone else where the key resources are going to be, so you can go prospecting, etc., etc. So although this area is out of play and becomes in play, you're still interacting with it. There'll be an element, you are all ultimately in competition, but you will be able to collaborate. Again, because you have different objectives, there may be a win-win situation, certainly in the early parts of the game, so you'll be encouraged to collaborate, but then also ultimately compete. So effectively, it's a balance of investment game. You increase your resources by controlling the area. You can choose to invest in research, which will give you technologies which will help you exploit. You can go out prospecting, which will give you more information about the area that's about to come revealed to you. You can invest in the infrastructure you need to exploit those resources or to claim that territory. You can invest in units, which will help you build your power control, or you can invest in your own economy and build your engine, which will help you push forwards in future. And that's about it. We'll also have consideration to extreme events, random events which will drive the gameplay. So, for example, extreme weather events, etc., etc. But ultimately, it is power blocks competing over a long period of time to encroach on this area as it becomes revealed.
Cool. Thank you.
And it'll be ace. Yeah.
Tim, do you have any?
Yes, I do.
Observation.
I'm going to do the unexpected. Which is, I felt there was an honourable mention in my group, so I'm going to give up my comments to ask Phil Pornell to do an elevator pitch on the game he and Rex came up with very, very quickly.
So it's actually two games. That's not a game. The first game, you buy your stuff over 5-year increments, and you can make investments in future technologies. You can choose to undercut your operating and maintenance costs of your existing ships with potential risks. So every 5 years, you're making your investments, and then you can choose what technologies you might invest in for future systems, what you invest in your current systems, et cetera, choose what you're going to reveal to the other guys or hide, et cetera. You make these decisions over 5-year increments, and then somewhere along the line, a crisis will break out. You don't know when, you don't know where, and you fight with or address the crisis, because it may not be kinetic, with the forces you bought. You know, by the way, those O&M costs we spoke about earlier, you may find out some of your assets you thought you were going to be using are not available because you undercut them. So there, that's the general principle of the game, and then we've also designed it to take in whether you're going to be completely rational or you're going to be rational bureaucratically in your competing sides about how what you're going to buy, and then whether or not Red is going to be active or essentially a artificial intelligence just following certain rules. So our goal was to put together essentially a portfolio balance investment kit similar to the MAG-G or whatever you call it, the new
matrix game
kit. It would be a portfolio balance matrix kit, and it would be designed so you could then adapt it to your country's political systems and such things. And then we could have a game where the Lockmart, which is the name of the game, tried to bribe the local politician, you know, for that district lobby the politician in that district to make the investment in those assets. So you make your investments rationally or irrationally, depending on your perspective, and then you fight with the force you have, not the force you want when the crisis arrives.
Excellent. Yes, I have fond memories of Jim designing a game about buying artillery systems. And it had this marvelous mechanism: after you evaluated which one was the best one, you got to fight the next war with the one to your left. Ouch. Okay, so who's next with this one?
Thank you very much. It is a slightly different method to everyone else in terms of how we do the design process, but and then what it does is we almost designed it as a presentation rather than as a design game, because it's probably a simpler way to do it. Basically, our game is a mega game. It's set at a key point in the future, but we're going to set the crisis to happen in 2035. And the whole point of this mega game is to look at policy insights in a future, highly tense Arctic environment. The players basically will consist of national, regional, commercial, and non-state actor teams. But of course, the trouble is we don't want those teams to be cooperating. We want them to be vermin, because that's more fun. So as well as having team or cell-specific objectives, they'll also have personal objectives too, which enable them to shaft each other gloriously. And obviously some of these objectives may change during the game, which also makes it more fun. Well, obviously the big teams will be the sort of key players in the Arctic, but also some of the smaller nations will be represented by individual players who will be desperately and forlornly going around hoping that someone will listen to them. Obviously having a media bit means sometimes they may find themselves playing through the influence area more than anything else. And characters like Greenpeace can, of course, go around causing chaos and trouble. The events, as many other people have described, are going to be events cards, the chance cards, basically, which will get turned every turn. And some of these will be crises, some of these will be sudden tensions, and some of these will be the discovery of new resources. Obviously, the targets of the game will be the resources, the trade routes, the territorial claims, but also there were tensions created by new technologies. We summarize this as zombie ice pirates, but basically this is everything from, you know, automated systems doing piracy to augmented humans operating in the Arctic during the colder periods. So zombie ice pirates rather summed it up. The turns will be seasonal, and the ice sheet will change according to the season. And we'll do seasonal turns, so as a result the ice sheet will move and change. Some of the chance cards will change the ice sheet, so you can't guarantee it'll be where you want it to be in a given turn. And of course, as warming occurs, you'll have more cards that cause the ice sheet to retract, and you will have expand. So there's an obvious way to do that. So obviously things can change. And we also, as a final idea, we wanted a parallel committee game with the Arctic Council forlornly weeping as the players basically ruined every negotiation they try and complete. And of course, every time there's a crisis, it would go to the Arctic Council to be resolved or fail to be resolved, and thus lots of people will be lying and cheating and deceiving even their own co-player on the Arctic Council to achieve their objectives.
Sounds like fun to me.
The parallel, again, we came up with was Unfrozen, and you don't have to sing for Ed, don't worry. He does a very good impression of Elsa. And that actually looked at a much longer-term game, looking at the impact with five-year turns, and again was looking at technology and resources expanding over a long period of time. And I thought it was, in some ways, I think some of the factors that you were looking at would actually be drawn into Icebreaker to make it a more realistic game.
Thank you. And lastly, we have this one.
Yeah, so we designed a game called Less Cold War, and it's a resource and exploration game, quite similar to quite a few of the other ones. It's going to be a card-driven game, so there will be random events, there will be opportunities that people need to exploit on given turns, but the main concept of the game is that people will have money, and they will have influence, and you'll need to spend them to gain rights or to muscle in onto new territories in the High North and to actually drill those resources. However, these things will be finite, and they'll be changeable depending on what happens in the global economy, which will be driven partially by these random event cards. And it will be the case that players, even though they're competing against each other, they'll have to make deals. They have to say, well, I don't have the money, but I have the influence to get into this area. So if we can come to an arrangement, maybe we can get joint drilling rights. And the victory conditions are that if you've the player who has expanded their influence and has the most oil and mineral rights on the board wins the game. There's going to be some key bits as well. So certainly environmental terrorism is going to be one of the things that would be quite prevalent, especially in the random events cards. It won't be a player themselves, but be things that the more influence and the more you're drilling and the more that you're kind of ruining the beauty of the High North, the more those teams are going to be targeting you. And to add a little bit of geopolitics to it, there is going to be some things where, you know, Russia will start with some more resources up there than some of the others, nations like Denmark and Norway, but they'll have real influence issues, and it's how you deal with that. You can invest in defense, and that'll be an important thing, both to prevent terrorists from destroying your infrastructure, but also to stop other players from sabotaging or simply muscling into areas that you are contesting or that are neutral. However, one of the key bits of this, and the reason why it's called Less Cold War, is that there will be an escalation tracker. And if war starts, the person who started that war loses the game, and the game ends. And you count up your victory points from there. So the idea is there's a little bit of push your luck. If you can't do it through influence and going through legal channels, and you're trying to muscle in using combat units, you may lose the game entirely and take it from there. But if you don't do that, you might be losing out to some of the other countries that have more influence over you. That's
right. Excellent. Comment?
So, similar to an earlier, annual members team, three games, two very similar to this one, so we combined them. And the big debate in the group was sort of the card-driven adjudication or a matrix game-style adjudication. And the discussion was around the fact that a badly executed Euro game does not really damage the analytics, but a badly executed matrix game and the analytics go to hell real fast. But John, would you like to do a counter-argument as to why the matrix game approach would have been the better one, just so that we cover that spectrum of conflict
A bad adjudicated war game is bad whatever the mechanism used. I would go for the adjudication, matrix game adjudication, to get the widest possible range of arguments, and some of those arguments were certainly going to be revealing those black swans we're all seeking. Someone's going to say something original and interesting, a possibility, which you could then take away, and that would be a very useful takeaway from the game.
So, very good arguments for both sides. The group decided that this approach was the best one to go with. Another topic of discussion was whether environmentalists, criminal gangs, corruption should be part of random card generation or active asymmetric players. Great team, I had very little to do. Thank you very much, team.
Excellent. So we had a number of games which were basically pole mill and negotiation and resource allocation games. This is making the assumption that resources are going to be tight and we're going to have to compete for resources in the High North. That's because we're wargamers and that's what we're doing. We're making the assumption that renewables and everything else aren't going to work out in the way that we thought they would, which is absolutely fine because that's what we're required to do. I was very interested in the idea that the indigenous people could actually band together and gain support from other areas, which I hadn't considered. The other thing that was also very interesting was the fact with declining populations in certain parts of the world, relocating forcibly or giving people incentives to go and live there to make sure you've got enough people in the area. That was also interesting. I do like the outdoor survival in the Arctic game as well. One of the other things that came up, which I noticed, we were talking about robotics, and it's a very dangerous environment, and the possibility of stealth robotic extraction. So everyone on the front of it, on the face of it, is being jolly nice, and yes, we're not going to explore, and then you have your deniable robot with all the serial numbers removed, actually going out and drilling and getting resources there. So, congratulations to everyone. That's a really good effort. Thank you very much.